Welcome into Texans All Access on a Tuesday. Texans are getting ready to prepare for a game at Dallas. We've got a lot to get to, you guys, with Hot Reads. Yes. Mark Vandermeer, Drew Doherty joining me. I feel like we should just do a Hot Reads, like spin the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Christian Kirksey, Texans Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Congrats. Mm-hmm.
Congrats. Titans firing their GM, John Robinson, on a Tuesday.
Congrats. Oh, no, wait
congrats.
A minute.
And then, you know, what else? What
Everything
else is
else
there?
Going
Everything
the
else
league.
Going on around the league. There's so many quarterback injuries and things going on around the NFL. It's like hard to keep up with.
How many teams are now trying to make the playoffs in playoff contention with serious aspirations that have their reserve quarterback in there,
yeah.
Right? You have the 49ers. You have Washington with Heineke. Let's face it, Wentz was the starter when they began. You know, it's interesting to see all this stuff play out.
The Ravens
are going to go with Huntley for a bit, and he can play. He played well on Sunday. We'll see how long Lamar Jackson's out. Speculation is 1 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the show. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. You're all caught up. Well, I mean, you look at the team we're facing on Sunday with Dak Prescott. I remember it didn't seem that long ago. After week one, I was asking, what's the worst scenario of these teams? And I threw a bunch of scenarios out there. And one of them was finding out that Dak Prescott might have to undergo thumb surgery. And we thought that was like a devastating diagnosis for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They'd lost their first game, and then they lost their starting quarterback. And yet, here they are.
Well, I talked to Brad Sham, voice of the Dallas Cowboys. That'll be on tomorrow night. And Brad is really interesting. I mean, he was on the sideline. He was the sideline reporter for the catch in San Francisco in 1981, Dwight Clark from Joe Montana in the NFC Championship game that beat the Cowboys. So he's been around for a long time. But he said, yeah, there was thought that this is it. Cooper Rush has got to come in. They're not going to win, but they end up winning. And they did very well with him. Now Dak's back in there. They're running the ball great. They're top four in scoring in points defensively and offensively.
And they're second in turnover differential. So,
ooh.
I mean, they're just roll. These guys, this is like a train coming down the track with big spikes in front of and like so flames and
but you know
all
what's
sorts
fun-
of stuff.
What's funny is I talked to David Hellman, who used to be a Cowboys team reporter. Now he's with Fox.
Is he your guy this week to talk about
he
the opponent?
He is my guy because he was talking about, and I asked him, and you know, it's funny when you're not a team reporter anymore, how you can talk about
now
things.
I can really tell you
now
what's going on.
He can really tell you some stuff. Well, he said, like, Dak Prescott, I asked him if this was the best he's seen him play since he's come back from the thumb injury. And he was like, well, he's thrown a lot of interceptions.
Yep.
He's which he has. Some. He's thrown seven.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the last three games, it's like one. So, okay, yeah. Coming back from the injury, he threw.
Spoiled Cowboys fans.
I know. I was
he's
like,
thrown
oh,
a lot of interceptions.
He's thrown one interception.
That was another question I had for Brad. Spoiled Cowboy fans.
Spoiled
we talked about
fans.
That. How spoiled are they, really? They haven't done anything since the mid-90s. So how spoiled are they? You know, Brad made the point they haven't made the playoffs back-to-back in 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a minute. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time since they've had consecutive playoff appearances. And, you know, they don't win playoff games much. The Texans have more playoff victories than the Cowboys since the Texans have come into the league. So there's that as well. This is the Cowboys, though. For some reason, they have this entitlement that they should be winning Super Bowls all the time. Why? Because you're the Cowboys? And I guess that's the answer.
I remember my other topic on the Wheel of Hot Reads, OBJ. The OBJ
okay.
fever
oh, yeah.
in Dallas.
That's another one.
Because, as David Hellman said, it's the most obnoxious player that might go to the most obnoxious team in football. So it's just like a match made in heaven. But it seemed like today Jerry Jones was hedging his bets on Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, he was out and about at a Mavs game the other day with Micah Parsons and some teammates. But Jerry Jones was very hesitant on signing him sight unseen without passing a physical coming off the knee surgery, which is different from what we've heard in the past few weeks about them wanting OBJ.
How could you not demand to work out OBJ before you sign him? And Johnny and I were talking about this either on the air or off. I can't even remember anymore, but it's not that precious to say it was off the record. But we were talking about OBJ as the marketing machine he is. He has turned himself into this incredibly valuable commodity. Everybody's interested in him, and he's really good, but he's not the best in the league.
Mm-mm.
Not even close, right? He's just really good. You can add him to your mix like the Rams did last year. He can play really well for you. Great. Good for you. I think he would help the Cowboys, but would he upset the chemistry that they have going on right now? Because they do have something going on right now. Dak Prescott is playing better. I mean, you have a lot of assets there to work with, including CeeDee Lamb, who is dangerous.
But based on all the stuff you said just a few moments ago about how it's been so long since these guys have won a Super Bowl, and what we've seen over the last 25 years playoff-wise, are you kind of like me? I don't believe in these guys. I think they're great. I think they'll get to the playoffs, but I think they'll figure out a way to screw things up once they get there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping. That's my assumption, Drew, because I'm not a Cowboy fan. I'm quite the opposite here, so I want to see them screw it up. If I were a fan of theirs, I'd say, hey, you know, give it a shot. You're going to be playing at home, and you take it from there. Now, how are things going in the NFC here? Because they are in a race
for
the number one seed. I know Philly's up there right now, but they play them once more. They can hope that Philly loses, and they maybe win out they just win out, and Philadelphia loses to Dallas and one more, and then they've got it. Then they've got the number one seed.
All right, I have a question for you guys. I asked my guy David this as well. If I told you that the Cowboys would be 9-3 and Dak Prescott would have to miss some games, what would be more surprising, that or the fact that everybody in the NFC East is over 500 right now?
The NFC East thing, definitely.
Like, who would have seen either of those, but yes.
The Giants and Washington being over 500, if you told me that prior to the season, that, hey, in December, they're both over 500. What? And then you look at the AFC South, and that is a big reason, because the AFC South cannot beat the NFC East yet, and that's a huge reason why the NFC East is doing well. We thought, well, you're playing a division that's kind of soft, right? I mean, they got the Giants, and, you know, Philly's good. They made the playoffs last year. How good are they going to be? Well, look at them. Best record in the league, undefeated, coming in here on November 3rd. We know the story. Washington, look at what they've done. The Giants are way better than anybody thought, so good for them. Too bad, so sad.
Too bad, so sad for really us, and actually, even if you're in contention, the NFC East, because I don't think we've ever seen all four of those teams being strong at the same time. Usually it's like one,
right?
Or it's two. The Giants are good. We're good for a long time. Then the Eagles were good. Washington's always sort of struggled. And the Cowboys the same. The Cowboys have like up and down years. But back to what you guys were talking about earlier, I think this is a really talented Cowboys team, at least on paper. I think they could make a run in the playoffs just because they're so balanced.
They should.
But
I just don't think they will.
Two stellar running backs.
Yeah.
Two.
They have two stellar running backs. They have a good enough receiving crew. They've got the tight end. They've got
defense,
a lot going for them.
Their defense is amazing. And Micah Parsons, aside from him, they've got other playmakers, and they've got 48 sacks right now, which leads the NFL. They get some pressure on opposing quarterbacks.
They've got to go out and win that division. If you're the Cowboys, you cannot play on the road opening weekend, and I think they know it. So they still have a chance to win the division. We'll see. I know that it sounds – look, every week we say it. There's a lot of football left. Five games is not a ton, but it's significant. A lot of different things can happen. It can be seismic, especially in the NFC. We'll see how it goes. How about Brady?
You say five games. Think about it. What did the Texans do five games in? They were 1-3-1. They went to their bye, and you're feeling good after a win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how about this?
Big difference.
What did they do in their final five games last year? The Texans in the final five games last year, Mills played well enough, and you thought, okay, the arrow is pointing up. We're going in the right direction here. You won a couple of games out of those five. Let's see what happens. Good, good, good. And then wham. 2022 arrives, and speaking of divisions...
Speaking of final five games in Davis Mills...
Ooh. Well, we don't know yet, do we?
We don't know anything, but let's... any speculation? You guys want to throw any speculation out there?
All right, so the Lovey translator was out yesterday, DP.
Okay.
And based on what Lovey said, and I'm not sharing anything. I don't know anything off the record.
We don't know
I really
anything.
Don't.
For the record, we know nothing. And this is pure speculation.
For the record, we don't know anything. Have a nice day, everybody. But... the fact that Lovey said, you know, we do things, we don't announce things earlier in the week or whatever he said yesterday, I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like that. That made it sound like, okay,
maybe
they might go back to Davis Mills now because Kyle Allen has had a rough go of it the last two games. Or Lovey's just playing possum here and just saying, okay, I'm not going to reveal anything and we'll go back to Allen or we'll stick with Allen. I don't know how he's going to do it. Or... the Driscoll cat.
When are we going to see that again?
Driscoll comes into the flow and runs
ever
the rock.
Like every play Driscoll for this, cat? Like Mark Vandermeer has. But yeah, to kind of add on to what Mark was saying, normally Lovey's very declarative, very definitive when asked about, are you going to make a change at this or with this or with that? Well, yesterday the answer was, Guys, you kind, quote, guys, you kind of know how we do it right now. On a Monday afterwards, we can talk about that play right there. Things get out a little bit quick around here. So if there's a so he just kept on going and going and going. And normally he's quick and declarative.
Like, no, we're not doing that.
That seemed to be, if there's any tell or any tip of a hand, that looked like it to me. Well, so,
and I don't know what it's going to mean for this team, honestly, but it feels like, why not at this point, you know, try something else or try that again? Because last year when Mills sat, came back a lot better. I know it's only been two games. Who knows? Maybe something changed. We'll see how they handle it.
I mean, the reason why you benched Davis Mills in the first place was because of the turnovers.
Yeah.
Right? And then you haven't really fixed that problem with Kyle Allen.
It's kind of gotten worse. Yeah.
It's gotten worse in the sense that when you do have a turnover, it's so costly because it ends up being like a fumble six or a pick six.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. I mean, the issue obviously lies elsewhere.
I've never heard it called a fumble six.
That's me.
That's yours?
I feel like that's been called a fumble six.
Fumble six?
Yeah.
You really?
I've heard it before. Sure.
Kick six, fumble six.
I've heard kick six, pick six. Fumble six doesn't have that ring to it.
Stop it. Of course it does. You're just saying that because you think... because you think I made it up. That's why you don't think it has a ring to it.
I don't think
if somebody else came up with it.
I'm about to give you credit.
He's like, nah, it just doesn't sound as good. But the other ones sound
fumble
fantastic.
Fumble six. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he had a couple of those. So why not go back to Davis Mills at this point?
A couple of T6s, turnovers that lead to six directly.
Nah, I don't like that at all.
All right.
I like mine better.
Okay.
I just think a change is coming based off of what he said yesterday. The way the hesitation.
Yeah, and we'll see. Look. You brought up divisions, right? NFC East, AFC South. This division is flat out weird right now because John Robinson got fired today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you look at...
GM of the Titans.
Okay, you look at what's happened this year, all right? You look at the Colts firing their coach. So these are two projected teams to go to the playoffs, right? To do very well. Some people had the Colts winning the division, and the Titans are leading the division. And they've made major moves, one firing a coach, one firing a GM. And the Jacksonville Jaguars are sitting there like, well, we have a coach, we have a GM.
So
the Texans are
that.
Here, we have a coach, we have a GM. But the two teams on top, they're making those moves. Now, I say on top, we'll see where they all end up. Maybe the Jags go on a winning streak. Maybe the Texans go on a winning streak. But they are where they are right now.
All right, since you brought up the Titans, like, what can we make of the timing of this firing of John Robinson? On a Tuesday, heading into week 14, like you said, they're at the top of their division.
Yeah.
They're in a playoff race to fire. Usually you don't see GMs fired until after the season.
That's a good
point. Think purely from a football standpoint, because I've also seen stuff about, well, this has nothing to do with football. It's behind the scenes, da-da-da. But if you just go from a football standpoint, maybe they've really just not liked his drafts the last few years and what he's done, and they want to get ahead of it, and now's the time from now through, you know, the end of the draft. You got to get that out of the way. So
it's a good point.
That's something. Although a lot of hay is in the barn, so to speak.
I have my own theory.
But
on this.
Yeah, I don't think during the draft last year when they make that trade for AJ, trade him away, I don't think everyone was on board with that, it looked like, from that organization's standpoint. So combine that with the draft coming up in 5-6 months, and let's get ahead of it.
You're a month away from the end of the season. So, you get the gun jumped by a month here with the GM.
Are you going to hire somebody or you're going to?
Well, no, they got an interim. I don't know how they're going to handle it, but Vrabel has power. This is a power grab right here. So Mike Vrabel has power. The ownership makes the move, but Vrabel wanted this done. Vrabel is an evaluator just like everybody else. And as the coaches win, they get more power. Now, to John Robinson's credit, he came in, the team was 3-13, right? He didn't draft Mariota. All right, so he comes in, and they have two winning seasons with Mike Mularkey. All right, they're able to do that. They win a playoff game with Mike Mularkey, and they fire Mike Mularkey. Robinson hired Vrabel. He brought Vrabel through the door. But these things happen in the NFL because somebody grabs power, somebody's winning, somebody's got the juice with the ownership or whatever, and things change. And that's just life in the National Football League. It just happens, and you know, Mike Vrabel probably deserves to have a lot of say. And Robinson, if you look at it, the bad moves, they look bad. He has brought in a lot of good players. He has. And I know sometimes it's a collective thing, but you got to give him credit, at least some, for bringing in Ryan Tannehill as a backup to Mariota. Then he ends up being a very capable starter for them. Here's the other thing about them, and I'll shut up after this. They haven't won a playoff game since the day before the Texans played their last playoff game. Think about that for a moment. It was 2019 last won a playoff game. They've made the playoffs each of the last 2 years, 2020 and 2021, but they exit quickly, all right? And they exit at home both times. So in Vrabel's mind and ownership's mind, they're thinking, are we getting better or are we getting worse here? We're about to go into the postseason again. We should win this division, but are we equipped to deal with anybody? Philly just came in here and boat raced us with a player we traded to them, which might be another source of contention between Vrabel and John Robinson. Yeah. So there's a lot to consider here.
Can you imagine?
I was going to go. I was going to say A.J. Brown, they just played him. He had 2 touchdowns.
A lot, yeah.
And, on the heels of that.
And Burks gets concussed, unfortunately for him. He's been playing well for them
overall.
He actually
has since he started. I mean, we heard a lot in the offseason about him not being in good conditioning.
A rookie. He's coming around.
But Isaiah Wilson, their first-round draft pick 2 years ago.
Didn't make it.
That didn't work out. Mm-hmm. They've had a couple of first-round picks that have been total busts.
Yeah.
And then the A.J. Brown trade, which, we heard all the reports that Mike Vrabel was not happy with that trade. And then you go to Philly. He beats you. And somebody tweeted or quote-tweeted a video of Philly fans in front of the owner's box turning around and, basically taunting the owner's box every time A.J. Brown did something or made a big play or scored a touchdown. And then 2 days later, you fire your GM. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it was maybe coming, but that just tipped things over because they were probably not pleased with how that trade worked.
If Robinson's going to do that without Vrabel being on board, then that's to Robinson's fate, right? That is signing your death warrant with the organization.
Yeah.
Because I understand not wanting to pay a receiver gargantuan money. I get that because they're paying Tannehill. Believe it or not, they're paying Tannehill.
And Henry.
They're paying Henry. They're paying Jeffrey Simmons. You know, they've got bills due. It's hard to pay everybody. We all know that here. But A.J. Brown, was he worth it? Yeah, probably. Easy for me to say. If Vrabel didn't want it and it got done, that's terrible. Those moves should not be made without Vrabel signing off. Draft choices should not be made without Vrabel saying, yeah, I'm on board with this. Let's go. If there's a tremendous disagreement, then you need ownership to break the tie, or ownership has to designate one of those guys to have final say.
Well, think about it on draft night, when it's the first round, when they peek into the war room, would you say 85, 90% of the time, the war room is very happy. There's lots of guys shaking hands and pumping fists and we got our guy type of sentiments.
Yeah.
The war room last year is Mike Vrabel walking up, turning his back on the camera, walking away, and then turning around with a frown on his face and sitting back down. Mm. That's normally not the move you make and the body language you make when you're excited about what's going on, when you're pumped about what you've just done. And that's what happened. That's what they showed last year right after the trade.
They got a lot for him, but maybe he wasn't happy about losing a great player because what do coaches want? Great players, right? I don't care what it costs. We want the great player. Although that doesn't always happen because it didn't happen here in a certain instance when a great player was dismissed.
Too soon.
Sorry. Okay, go on.
He's going to be a free agent next year.
Too soon.
So it will always be too soon, yes, and another wide receiver traded away. But anyway, one of the other hot reads that we wanted to get to, a big one, Christian Kirksey. Texans Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. He spoke to the media today. And did you guys get it? No, you guys talked to...
We talked to Malik Collins. We didn't talk to Christian Kirksey.
One-on-one.
But we have a video out, HoustonTexans.com, Texans social media platforms. Very good vid on Christian Kirksey and Nick Caserio. He'll be on tomorrow to talk about this. I played a cut on Texans today on the Odyssey stations today. Very cool that he gets this honor. It's for the team. Now you're up for the entire league, and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, the Texans have had a winner in the past in J.J. Watt.
Mm. I feel like that's always such a tough competition because you see what players are doing across the league. And then Christian Kirksey, mostly, I think, everything he's done in the community, but Uvalde, helping to raise money. The players donated $200,000 of their own money after the shooting at Robb Elementary, and then ownership put in another $200,000, so they donated $400,000, and then went to Uvalde, met with the high school football team, donated uniforms, met with the players, And so it was really cool today, actually. The Uvalde High School football coach and their team captain gave Christian Kirksey one of their jerseys in a frame that said 58, and it was Walter Payton Man of the Year. So
yeah, he's a guy that walks the walk, and it was cool hearing from Desmond King this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Desmond was a freshman, he said, when Kirksey was a senior at Iowa, and he said even back then he was always community-minded, and he's the epitome of a community leader. So that was really cool to see, and it's a guy who really walks the walk when it comes to all that stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Love seeing that, and I can't wait to see more of it when we get to the NFL honors the night before the Super Bowl. See if he won it. But look, whoever wins it, it's great. It's great to see all these guys doing wonderful stuff in the community.
I know. I mean, Offensive Rookie of the Year, isn't that one of the awards that they give out that night, or do they give that out before,
good question.
After?
I think it does come out that night.
I feel like they give out so many awards around
that time. He needs a strong finish, though. He needs a strong finish to get this.
I hate to wish injury on anybody, but Kenneth Walker Jr. Did get hurt, or the third got hurt.
Yeah, he did. Stop it, DP.
I didn't wish it on him. That's okay. I'm just prefacing that I did not wish it on him.
We're talking about Damian Pierce now, too.
Yeah, we're talking about Damian.
But that's the race.
Right.
Damian Pierce and the other offensive rookie running backs.
Burks with a big finish could get it, too. You know, there are a lot of players
out
there.
Or Christian Watson with the Packers.
Watson is lighting it up, DB.
Well, I thought Breece Hall was on track until he got hurt. I mean, yeah, you're right. There's plenty of other players, but, you know, our guy is the first.
You had the head
to
coach.
To reach 1,000 scrimmage yards among all these rookies.
That is nice. You had the head coach on Monday saying our offense is based on Damian Pierce.
Yeah.
So he just anointed him that. We all knew that already, but to hear a head coach say that about a rookie, it's cool stuff for Damian. And I hear the guys debated on 610 all the time about don't wear him out, not too many carries.
Like, bring his carries down because we don't want to overdo it this year.
And I'm all about that too.
I'm okay with that too.
I want him to last the rest of the way, and I want him to be healthy going into the off season so he can have a nice, restful, and productive ramp up to 2023. But at the same time, yeah, look, I know how people feel, draft pick and all that. You could still win a couple of games and still get the number one overall pick. So let's win. Let's see them beat the Cowboys on Sunday. Let's run the rock with Damian Pierce. Play keep away. Get turnovers. Win. I'm getting fired up.
Hey, speaking of Pierce, one of my boys at home asked me the other day, hey, is he going to be a team captain? And initially I was like, no way. He's a running back and he's a second-year player. But then I thought, well, wait, he's probably your best player.
Yeah.
He also is continuously called out by the head coach as
a leader.
Hey, this guy plays the way and finishes the way we want to all finish.
Yep.
He's beloved by everybody in the locker room. They all giggle. I mean, it doesn't matter who you're talking to, whether if it's defensive guy, special teamer, offensive guy, they all love this guy. And I was like, he could, maybe.
I could see
That's a possibility. Yeah. He could be a captain, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah. Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
I can't name the starting quarterback for 2023 right now. Mm-hmm. And if you can, that's tremendous. Whoa. You know, I give you multiple choice, but we're not going to do that game right now. But Damian Pierce is definitely going to start opening day 2023 with health. And I think you're right, Drew. He's a team guy. He always credits the offensive line.
No matter what. Like he's... even if they didn't really play all that great, he still is saying they did. Yep. I mean, it opened it up for him. Like, it's really, he makes all the right moves, says all the right things, all the right steps in that regard. So it's been impressive.
I actually asked him about reaching 1,000 yards from scrimmage and being the first rookie to do so. And he said, well, there's no reason for me to not do it every single year. Because now that I know that I can do it, that expectation is there that I need to reach that mark every single year. And I really like that because, you know, some guys are like, oh, it's all about the team and, you know, we didn't get the win, which is fair. And, you know, I think he had said all those things, too. But the fact that he put the onus on himself that he should always reach that milestone, I really like that.
Yeah.
But speaking of team captains, I want to see my guy Laramie get team captain again next year. I had a one-on-one with him. And people think that things like that don't matter to players. And a guy like Laramie, who's 7 years into the league, I could feel how important that was to him to wear the C on his chest. He said that really meant a lot to him.
I'm glad you pointed out that interview, and I really think we should run that again on these shows, and people can check it out again on HoustonTexans.com.
Let's run it later tonight. Why not?
I mean, we could...
Let's just run it.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Let's run it and go home. No, but it was so good, DP, and people need to hear that. They need to hear Laramie like that because you never get to hear Laramie, right?
No,
you just really don't get to hear him much at all, and you got a lot out of that. And I felt it that night against the Philadelphia Eagles here, just watching him walk out to midfield for the coin toss. There was just something about it. There was a spring in his step. You could tell he was juiced up about having that C on his chest. And I think you'll see it again next year. Why not?
Yeah. And when we introduce...
I'm announcing the captains right now for 2023.
All right. Laramie, Damian, are those your captains
that's
for
that's
offense?
All we need right now.
You need two offensive, two defensive, and one special teams. That's usually how we do it, right?
I'll go Petrie.
Oh, yeah.
Kirko's still here. Wait, who do... Oh, Jerry Hughes. I want Jerry Hughes back.
I want Jerry Hughes back,
I'll take Jerry Hughes until he can't play anymore. Then I want him as a Texans legend or as a coach or an advisor or whatever. Somehow I want him in this organization forever.
Yeah, stay close to home, Jerry Hughes.
Yes.
Jerry Hughes, Petrie, and then John Weeks, of course. Of course, John Weeks. But two weeks ago...
John Weeks for president. Taste of the Texans last night, which is an annual event with the best restaurants in Houston that you need to check out every year here with the Houston Texans. But anyway, Taste of the Texans last night, I'm introducing a group of players. Not everybody was there, but a bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. And last on our list was John Weeks. Oh, maybe they did it alphabetically. I thought they did it. They gave it to me that way, and I thought maybe...
He's the most important player.
Maybe
also
they did it because of
tenured one.
Seniority or whatever. But I just wound up for that announcement. And now, the veteran. You know, I just really let it rip for John Weeks because he needs the love. I mean, he doesn't need the love. He deserves the love, I should say.
I feel like that when Nick Caserio first got here and one of the first moves he made, we released John Weeks in the offseason, but then we brought him back.
Right back.
And so it was like a period of maybe like a week or two. People were in like an uproar about John Weeks not being here. And I was like, that's really cool to see because he's just always been here. Mm-hmm. But to know that once he was gone, even we felt it too. Like, wait, so John Weeks is not the long snapper anymore? You know that day's going to come, but it's like we're not going to be prepared for
it. The John Weeks tell-all book. No, that's not
You won't really be prepared for it and won't really believe it until week one of whatever year that is, or whatever week it happens, and you see somebody else out there snapping the ball.
Yeah.
Like, it's not Weeksy anymore.
Because it was Witzman was the last guy that did it, right?
That'll be weird. Who?
Witzman? Wasn't it Witzman?
Mm-hmm. No, it was, geez, that's a good question.
They,
I remember
they bring
Pittman
him back,
back in
Pittman,
the day.
Yeah, Pittman, that's what it was.
Wait, did it go from Pittman to Weeks directly?
Because Pittman had been the guy, and then they screwed around and had Dreesen and James Casey doing it in 09, and then they were just like, let's bring back
Pittman. I could understand that team's always trying to find, hey, maybe we can get this guy to do it. We don't have to use the roster spot on the long snapper. But
J.J. Watt was once the third string long snapper when he was here.
Oh,
you know he'd
fact.
Love to do that. He wants to do anything that he possibly can, like block punts and commit 15-yard penalties.
He
like
damn
he did
near
in
got
Cleveland.
Him in Cleveland, though.
No, honestly, I don't know why you wouldn't put Clowney and Watt and all those guys on for very important ones, but then it's like, move over. We got a big one here, buddy. I know you've been serving the time on special teams, but now it's my turn, so I guess there's some of that.
Well, another guy that did multiple things, Justin Reed, kicking. He's getting himself in a little bit of hot water.
Ooh.
With the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll get into that and some more on Texans All Access. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, Texans All Access. Justin Reed, you may have heard of him. He was one of our favorites here in the locker room, talked every single week, was great with the media. You know, was he not also Walter Payton Man of the Year?
A nominee, yes.
A nominee one year. I mean,
I think was that the COVID season?
It might have been the COVID season.
Or was that last year?
No, that was last year.
It was last year. Okay.
Oh, just last year.
Last year was like COVID part two, the sequel, and it wasn't as good. It wasn't as powerful as the
COVID. It was
COVID
light. It was the season started off normally.
I still see push notification headlines on my phone like COVID flare up and stop it.
Sorry,
no.
So the Chiefs faced the Bengals on Sunday, and Justin Reed is not done tweeting.
What?
Earlier today he tweeted,
no.
Unpopular opinion. We lost, but I was still right. Zipper emoji face. Cry about it. So he's basically,
what was he right about?
I guess Tyler Higbee, he shut him down, but
he's not that good.
People were posting videos of all of the plays that he missed, one of them being stiff-armed by Samaje Perine, and it's not a good look. And so people are really after Justin Reed on Twitter. When I saw him trending this morning, I thought,
here it is.
What's
Reed
on?
Had predicted, this is Bengals Wire, that he'd lock down Hurst and others, but Hurst left early with an injury.
Hurt.
Yeah. T. Higgins scored a touchdown. Jamar Chase had 97 yards and a pair of critical plays in the fourth quarter. Tyler Boyd would have scored two if he didn't drop a wide open touchdown. So there it is. And I think T. Higgins had that dart from Burrow reception that killed the clock. It was third and whatever, and he threw a laser, made the catch, and that enabled the Bengals to take a knee, so you didn't have to give it back to Mahomes up three, because you know what's going to happen there. He's at least going to drive for a game-tying field goal. So, look, we love Justin Reed, former Texan. Stop. Just stop.
You
put the phone down.
It was surprising, you know, because...
That he's doing this?
Yeah. I mean, he's just, A, based on knowing him and being around him all those years, but...
He was not like that when he was here.
And also, he has a brother who preceded him in the NFL, and kind of, it's like, you don't do that type of thing leading up to a game, you know? And
right.
I was surprised.
I think he's doubling down on his bets. Like, he said all that stuff, and now he's got to get back on there because people are crucifying him.
Get
on
ready
Twitter.
If they meet in the postseason, which is entirely possible with these two squads.
Mm-hmm. Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow shrugged off Justin Reed's midweek comments. I would have cared a lot more if he knew what he was talking about. It's like, ouch.
No, this is great for the league, actually. It is. I mean, Justin shouldn't be doing it, but the fact that people talk about it and get all bent out of shape.
I know, I'm surprised.
When are you going to do Monday Night Football, DB? When are you going to do that? Come on.
When am I going to do what?
The Monday Night Football game from last night.
Oh, let's do it. Were you watching it to the very end?
No, you know what I was doing? I was at Taste of the Texans, but you know what I did? I watched the 12-minute replay on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Which is awesome because you get every crucial play and in 12 minutes breeze through an NFL game that you don't... Look, I don't need to hang on every word of Monday Night Football necessarily. I would have if I were home, but I wasn't. I was at Taste of the
Clips
Texans.
You right along.
So I came back. I saw that Brady led them to victory when they were down 16-3. So I wanted to see exactly how it happened. And Mark Ingram running out of bounds before he gets the first down.
Ugh.
And that means, it's third and one. They don't get it.
Ugh.
And guess who gets the ball back? But with barely a prayer, yet it's Tom Brady. It's kind of like the Patrick Mahomes thing. Don't allow Brady a crack in the door, a crack of daylight.
But with the way that the Bucs have been playing this year and Brady, like I didn't watch the game at all until maybe the last, like the second half of the fourth quarter, mildly. Mm-hmm. And then that last drive, I was like locked in. I was like, okay, I'll leave when there's a commercial break. That drive just would not end. It just, him driving down the field. I thought, well, this could be 50-50 because like, is Tom Brady washed up? Maybe.
Clearly
they've only won
not.
Like six games, well, five heading into last night's game. And yet that was, they said, the biggest comeback he'd ever had in a fourth quarter, which I found surprising. They kept referencing the Super Bowl against Atlanta.
That's the only other time in his career he's come back from double digits.
He's never had to come from behind from double digits.
No, it's always like they're down a score. Or they're down a score and he rallies them to victory or something.
And it was the latest because I think when the touchdown was actually scored, there were 3 seconds left on the clock. So it was the latest comeback that he'd ever launched where he scored. So I thought that was very fascinating. And then, of course, he's so fired up afterwards. Like, you kind of, he's like the underdog now. Do you not feel like he's the underdog?
He's always thought he's the underdog.
I now look at him like, oh, Tom Brady, this might be it for him. He got divorced. He's so sad.
He will always be a sixth-round pick in his mind. He will always be replaced by Drew Henson in his mind.
And in
nothing,
my mind.
Nothing that he's accomplished will ever forget that or ever change that.
And now he's thinking, oh, they're trying to push me out the door. Everybody is. They're done with me. He's still here. It's 2022. It's over 20 years later.
He's a vampire.
He's still here making plays.
He's a vampire, yes.
And I watched that drive, and I thought, why does it look so easy for him? It's a funny thing with the great ones in any sport. They make it look easy.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods. Oh, just make the putt. Just hit a great drive, a great approach within 4 feet. Just do it. Michael Jordan, just hit that bucket. LeBron James, whatever. Brady, just bang, bam, bam, right down the field. Ball is accurate. Guys are not that open, but open enough, and he puts the ball exactly where it needs to be. Give me just enough time. But you know what? I don't need that much time. Just give me enough, barely enough. Give me 2 seconds, and I'll get the ball out accurately.
Okay, but in your 12-minute recap, did you see what happened before? Because I feel like you're missing so much context here, because that's not the view that
I know.
The
way you said that. Just I'm like, the preface, that was good.
First of all, this is how Mark watches Game of Thrones. He fast forwards the whole thing.
12-minute recap.
Including the intro. He cannot be bothered to watch the intro, which is one of the best intros ever.
No, you don't need to watch
intro. I just fast forward the fighting. It's all fighting. What did you watch exactly?
No, I fast forward Game of Thrones and shows like that. Oh, we're walking through the woods now. I'll just zip along, all right? And if something like happens, like some evil thing just flashes out of the dirt, okay, then I'll rewind. Like, what happened here? who flashed out of the dirt? Like what apparition came up out? I don't know. That's how I do it, so I don't have to wait through all that suspenseful
build-up
stuff.
But you're missing so much context. Dazed and Confused, one of the all-time great movies. You love classic rock.
Yeah.
I told you to watch it because you would love the music.
Yeah.
Mark watched it on an itty-bitty TV screen on the plane.
Yeah.
And then fast-forwarded all the songs.
Can't do that.
Can't do that?
No. You would love that.
You would love that movie.
Plus the sort of spiritual sequel to it. Everybody Wants Some, the baseball movie.
I actually watched that.
Same director.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too. You'd like that.
Is that a spiritual sequel? So not, in fact, a sequel?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
But Linklater himself has said...
You know what I've been into lately, though? The rewatchables on The Ringer, like Bill Simmons and those guys. They watch movies and talk about them.
Do they fast-forward through them?
No, they don't, actually.
Do they watch them
in full? They laboriously
the
go through them.
They're the anti-Vandermeer movie watchers.
Yeah. Anyway, I had a point to all this. Oh, yes. On
the
your
Brady thing.
Okay, so the Brady thing. Before he threw the touchdown... He threw another touchdown pass, which got called back because of offensive holding.
I did see that.
So I was like, oh no, bad things
now
are happening.
Now he's backed up. Doesn't
now he's
matter.
Backed up. I didn't think it was that coming that easy to him on that final drive.
Remember in the Super Bowl where Montana had that final drive against the Bengals and hit John Taylor? They had a holding penalty on Randy Cross, right? Or was it a false start? It was some kind of penalty that had them go backwards, but no problem. It's Joe Cool getting the job done. Well, Brady got the job done last night, as he's done so many times. And look, with the Patriots, I hate him like poison. With the Bucs, they're in the NFC. He's the old guy. I'm kind of pulling for the old guy sometimes, especially against the Saints. I don't care about them. Sorry, I do like you Saints for preseason practice purposes, and you're kind of a sister team of the Texans, but right now, forget it.
Yeah, they've got some former Texans on that Saints team. I like that after the game, they asked Brady about his comeback, and he said it was his daughter's birthday. And she said, oh, no, it's the Saints. You never play well against the Saints.
I just thought,
he's so quaint.
Yeah.
He, like, wins all these games, and his daughter's telling him, but you always... He's so folksy. Like, even when, you know, we used to play him against the Patriots, I was always so taken aback by when he would talk to the media. He was so folksy in his little stories.
The Brady back to New England story that came out last week, there were rumors or whatever, that Tom Brady could go back to New England for a reunion with Bill Belichick.
No
chance. I doubt it. But the funny thing is, doesn't this have to end at some point? Why are we talking about this like, well, where's Brady going to be next year? Because obviously he's still going to be able to play great. Are you serious? And they were talking about San Francisco again. And I'm thinking, that is incredible. The fact that you even discuss this for a 45-year-old guy. 10 years ago, when the thought was, well, Brady wants to play till he's 45, we were thinking, ha, ha, that's ridiculous. And look at him now.
But I think that's the reason why, is because for so many years we've speculated on his retirement, and now we know it's never going to happen. So when he does retire, we're going to be so shocked when he retires.
No, I think it could happen. Well, never mind.
I don't think so. I think that why would he want to end on a losing note, especially if, you know, he thinks he's
I wouldn't count them out. They get healthy postseason. 2 years ago, they won on the road everywhere. They could do it again. You know, and you don't have to play everybody. You just have to play who's right in front of you. It's like the NCAA tournament. You don't have to play 65 teams. You just have to play who's ever in front of you.
They were a sneeze away from the Super Bowl last year. I mean, think about that.
They should have beaten the Rams.
Yeah.
Stafford made some plays, and that was it. And now look at the Rams. How are those picks now?
I 100% agree with you. I feel like this whole show's been around the NFL. So one final segment, I'm going to give you some little tidbits from my Laramie Tunsil interview that were not aired in the interview. How about that?
Oh, I like that.
Why don't we do that?
Let's do it.
We'll do a little bit of revealing here. Nothing major or earth-shattering, but just some insight into Laramie
Tunsil. No, it is major. Sell
it. Is it major?
Oh, okay. Sell it.
It's major breaking news. It's all coming up on Texans All Access. Don't go anywhere. Final segment of Texans All Access. We usually go around the NFL, but I thought...
We've
kind of already done that, and we mentioned the Laramie Tunsil one-on-one that I was able to do with him last week, and I thought, it's a 12-and-a-half-minute interview or so. The podcast is up on HoustonTexans.com, as is the video. But there were some notable things that I learned about Laramie, both during the interview and after the interview, which I thought I would share.
Okay.
First of all, it was a big week for Laramie because he was going to be facing Myles Garrett. And we all saw what happened when he faced Myles Garrett last year. He basically shut down Myles Garrett.
Yes.
And Myles Garrett sort of cried about it afterwards and said that the Texans had chipped him a bunch and they need a lot of help. But Brian Baldinger had a great breakdown of it where he just showed Laramie one-on-one just beating Myles Garrett over and over and over again. So this year after the game, I was in the locker room. We're talking to Cody Stutes and we were just talking about Laramie and how he did. And Cody said, you know, I don't think there was much of Laramie and Miles. I feel like they didn't have Miles on him. So I chatted with Laramie afterwards, after the media had left, and I said, what did you see? Well, I asked him during the interview, what did you see? He said he saw a lot of Jadeveon Clowney during the game. So he had told me that the Browns defensive, the D-line coach, actually recruited him at Ole Miss. And so they did a little switcheroo, and they put Clowney on him. Mm-hmm. And Clowney didn't have much in the stat sheet
Happened in 2018 when Tunsil was a Dolphin. Clowney was still here. Clowney didn't do too much in that game. And that's something that I remember John Harris always pointed to early on, right after the Texans had traded for Tunsil back in 2019.
You're not going to get much on Laramie if you're a pass rusher, no matter who you are.
No matter
who you are. Now, as we say all this, there's no parade being thrown because of what happened with the offense and the turnovers. And that's how we began the show, right? Talking about fumble sixes and stuff like that. So that was a rough day for the offense, but great for Laramie because he's one of the very best around.
Well, and I feel like in a season like this, that's kind of aside from the losing, the other unfortunate thing is that if a player is having a great season like Laramie Tunsil or Jerry Hughes, it doesn't get as much recognition because, you know, around the league, nobody wants to talk about the teams that lost. And I was talking to Laramie. He really feels like this is probably one of the best seasons he's having. Like, he's really locked in, as is Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes is off to a tremendous start, you know, and it seems almost like a waste that such a good campaign goes unnoticed. But I just feel like we highlight so many other things, you know. I like to highlight stuff like that because I don't think enough people are talking about Laramie Tunsil and what he's been able to do this year. And the fact that, you know, he has never been all pro, and this could be an all pro season for him. He's a 2-time pro bowler, and, you know, all of these accolades, like, he really cherishes every single one of them. Mm. Even going to the Pro Bowl, the first year he went to the Pro Bowl, I remember him saying, I have on a piece of paper when I was a kid a list of my life goals, and going to the Pro Bowl was one of them.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and here we are thinking, oh, it's the Pro Bowl, what difference does it make? But it means a lot to these guys, as does being team captain, and I think all pro is really the next level for Laramie Tunsil.
And this year it's the Pro Bowl games. So how is he at Hula Hoop or whatever they're going to do?
Wouldn't that be fantastic to see?
Beanbags.
Beanbags.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hot dog eating contest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sure. That'll go over big.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the offseason. They can just work it off, right? It's all that muscle. That muscle will eat up the hot dogs.
I like that, though. I like that he'll get something in the postseason. I would figure Pro Bowl, but I got to think about everybody else in the AFC because with the Texans' record being what it is, it's hard to get recognition.
I think that submarines any chance
at
all pro for just about every guy on this team.
But when you look at actual stats and like pressures and sacks given up,
nerd stuff, Drew.
Look at the nerd stuff. And also, how about the writers and the people that vote for it? Like, they can't just vote based on record. They got to look at a guy's individual.
I think maybe like if the offense were just putting up monster numbers, but the defense was failing you or something like that. But it's been just so rough.
And on defense, it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anybody who's got a shot to make it despite some pretty good campaigns. And look, Hughes could still get 4 sacks in the last 5 games, end up with 12, but is that going to be enough to do it? I would doubt it. So it's too bad about that. But the real tough thing is the record. And, you know, maybe you can get some wins here on the way out.
Well, Jalen Petrie was mentioned in Peter King's article this week, Football in America. Is that what it's called?
So
players are getting some recognition here and there. It's hard to overlook if you're really having a great campaign. So that's going to do it for Texans All Access and our mini around the NFL, which was not really. Maybe we should start doing that. We'll just talk about random things. Random things in the final segment.
That's what this show is.
We are so random. But what's not random is the next show. It's Texans Matchup with John Harris. So stay tuned for that. That's going to do it for All Access. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, go Texans.